Ladies and gentlemen, this is this announcement for all passengers traveling on Qatar Airways flight 47.
Welcome to the Hold Room with ACC, a quick update on all things relating to airport development as well as the Airport Consultants Council. This is a new effort by all of us here at ACC World Headquarters to better engage with the membership as well as the broader airport industry. We'll be hosting short 10 to 15 minute programs several times a month. Sometimes we'll be interviewing ACC leaders, perhaps introducing new members, but most of all, providing a glimpse into what goes on here in Washington and around the country with the Airport Consultants Council. This week, TJ is back in the hold room with the Secretary Treasurer of the ACC Board of Directors, Larry Studdiford.
Hello and welcome to Hanging in the Hold Room with ACC. We are pleased to be joined today by Larry Studdiford, who's President of Studdiford Technical Solutions. Larry, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Sure thing. A quick background on your company. You're a small business consulting firm that brings 20 years experience, a specialization in aviation baggage handling systems, covering design, program, project management, construction administration, operational analysis, evaluations, and TSA compliant. So obviously you have an incredible breadth of experience in all things security and what's going on at airports. One thing we've been working on in the context of our strategic plan is focusing on human capital and bringing more people into the industry. And one of the things we've been asking our podcast guests are, you know, how'd you get into aviation? Take us back to when you were in college or whatever and how your journey into airports and aviation in general.
Oh, geez. Well, it goes back even farther. I grew up in a little town in Connecticut. My dad actually assembled transmissions for Black Hawk helicopters. So I've always been interested in aviation engineering. I've always wanted to do it since 10th grade when I did jet propulsion theory for my science fair project. It went into college where I was working as a co-op student at Pratt & Whitney Aircraft and jet engines and moved over to helicopters. But I fell into baggage handling systems completely by accident. Sent out resumes, got picked up by a little niche firm that did design, and you know, the rest is history.
Indeed. So over your career, you really have worked for a huge diversity of companies, in particular the largest of the large to some smaller ones. Talk a little bit about some of the ebbs and flows and some perspectives on working for different size companies and things like that.
Sure, and each one of them brought such a unique experience. You know, working with small companies when I first started in the industry was fantastic. They're very nimble, the ability to do different things, but didn't necessarily have the horsepower to do everything. Mm-hmm. And that was what attracted me to bigger companies to work there and learn a lot more than just the small little baggage handling industry that I was doing. But it got to the point in my career where it was time to go back to that niche and take what I learned at those big companies and put that into application. It was great experience all around.
Indeed. So now you started up your own company, what, about three years ago,
just about. Yeah, a little over 3 years.
So talk about that process. We've had a lot of members that have been in large companies and there was a merger and acquisition and they'll kind of do their own kind of offshoot either as an individual consultant or maybe a smaller firm. Talk a little bit about your process and I guess most importantly, what would you have told yourself 3 years ago that you know now?
Oh, wow. Well, I guess the first thing, it really did start with the mergers and acquisitions process. And it was something I've always wanted to do on my own, but I think it finally came to a head. Starting out in the industry with a 60-person firm, then to being employee number 7, then up to 3,000, 50,000, 100,000, then it was time to go back. And it was funny, my wife was extremely supportive, but she said, yeah, you'll never do it. Engineers aren't exactly entrepreneurial. And but it got to the point where I was meeting with a new person in the industry, and they were looking for help. And they kept, the way they told it, they were going to different people and they said, you really need to go talk to Larry. He can maybe point you to a certain person. And we came to my office, and this was probably November of 2015. And I had already established the LLC just to be ready to go when I wanted to go. And he said, so can you point to somebody that can offer what we've been talking about? And I paused and he looked at me and he said, it's you, isn't it? And I got up, closed the door, and we talked. And that was really the entree into sole proprietorship. It was having that anchor, that contract. I would say I'm very happy and fortunate that I didn't just leave, hang the shingle out and hope that the work came. But then again, building up a reputation over 24 years now certainly helped. What I wish I knew then, besides tax law and insurance regulations, that's a good question, because I think I took what I've learned over the last 20 years, number one, about how to hire people, what types of people to look for, what types of contracts to look for. It seemed very smooth, actually. So it was a good fit. It just happened to be the right time.
Yeah. And you actually have grown and started hiring people. Talk about that process. It's difficult because, you know, here at ACC, we're a small staff. We just hired our sixth person.
Yep.
And any
yep.
new hire is a pretty significant decision. So talk a little bit about
it. It really is. Yeah, it really is. And when I went out on my own, I didn't necessarily have a goal in mind of how big to get. You know, I don't think about the numbers. I just think about the fact that I was not able to do the work that I really like to do and enjoy before, and that's what I wanted to do. I've just hired my fourth employee, so there's five of us now after 3 years, which if I look back at the goals, I'm probably about 2 or 3 months behind schedule, but it's perfect. But what I've always looked for, and it's the same thing that I look for in projects and the work that I do, I want somebody that I can work with, and I don't think of them as employees. We're teammates, we're colleagues. Mm-hmm. For the most part, other than one person, even though I've known them forever, we've all worked together before. So I know how they work. I know how we can work together and collaborate together. Mm-hmm. Their ethics are majorly important. Because we're all remote, we don't have a central office.
Yeah.
You know, so I need to be able to trust that they're going to get their work done. Mm-hmm. And just a willingness and a love and a passion for the work that we do. So far, so good. It's worked out great.
Good deal. And I think, we at ACC can play a pretty important role on helping individuals that might want to consider starting their own business. We have in the past, we've done an article in one of the magazines we've done. And when I talk to people that might be exploring this, I have a resource like you or a number of other members that have gone through that process. And, here's what to expect and what to look for and what not to do. And again, I think there are some opportunities for us to help kind of accelerate the process and understanding what exactly they're getting into.
Well, and that's what I love about ACC. And really, I was able to rely on other people that were members. And I, of course, vetted this out before I just jumped ship. Was able to vet this out with other small business owners and think about, what are the things I need to look out for? And they're partners now. And really, the members of ACC, as a small business, I'm not going to have a large contract as a prime. These are the people that I'm going to be working with. And being a member for so long, it's been great to establish those relationships and understand who I can work with and who I want to work with and who wants to work with me.
Yeah.
And that's been the great thing. The relationships and the reputation really does precede you. It's such a, especially in my world, in baggage handling systems, it's a small, very incestuous industry. So you really need to make those relationships and establish them and nurture them.
Indeed. So let's kind of step back and look at security, TSA, and baggage systems in general. You have been around a long
God, you make
really
me feel so
time.
Old. Jeez.
So where are we now? How are things with TSA? And we're obviously have a huge focus on next generation technologies and quite frankly, a huge focus on the checkpoint with some new technologies coming in that might relate to biometrics or, carry-on baggage screening or personnel screening. You don't hear so much about the baggage area.
No, you really don't. And I think it's a testament to the success that we've had over the past 10, 15 years of really hammering that out and understanding the requirements and what we need. Where TSA is really in a sustainment mode when it comes to check baggage. Yes, there are new systems. There's plenty of new airports and terminals being built. But for the most part, they're in sustainment mode. Obviously, there will always be new algorithms. We're going through a recapitalization right now nationwide with some of the older equipment to establish that. But yeah, the checkpoints are really becoming the focus again. And I think from a funding perspective, it's a growing concern, right? As most people heard a couple of weeks ago when Administrator Prokowski went to the Hill and proposed a reduced budget. I'm not sure who proposes to reduce their own budget, but in any case, the budgets are dwindling. And for the frontline folks that we deal with at headquarters and at the airports, that's a concern. It's a real challenge. And there's always the rumors of funding being diverted from checked baggage to checkpoints mm-hmm. to get the CT in there. It's all well and good. I mean, don't get me wrong. We need to implement more security technology with the biometrics and the credential authentication. Anything we could do to improve that and keep that going is great. But I think that the days of unlimited spending have been over for quite some time, and it's dwindling even more. I think TSA has gotten smarter how they spend their money. There's always room for improvement there, but there are definitely improvements in that realm.
Indeed. And I think, you know, the TSA, primarily due to budgetary reasons, have extended life cycle estimates for the machines themselves. And, you know, systems are getting older at some mm-hmm. point. We will need some pretty substantial recapitalization programs underway.
Oh, sure.
And that I think that'll be a continual challenge on, you know, what can we do to bring in new capabilities? You got mm-hmm. high speed capabilities and things right. like that. And then you have, in the context of the fact that there's so many multi-billion dollar terminal redevelopment and capacity construction going on right now. So how do you kind of estimate, you know, future needs and when you're going to mm-hmm. have to upgrade some of the systems and kind of start planning and designing around that right now?
Sure. Well, I think the manufacturers, the security equipment manufacturers, have done a tremendous job at making the enterprise and the base equipment flexible. Right now, the recap we're going through with a lot of the equipment is solely because of technological obsolescence with the algorithms, because who knew that we'd be looking at these algorithms. From the flexibility standpoint, being involved, you know, from the beginning, from the initial BSIS, the baggage screening investment study, and the development of the planning guidelines and design standards for checked baggage, there's a continual improvement in that. It's a living document to make sure that we're as flexible as possible. We're still learning lessons through all the recap that we've done over the last couple of years, the industry, everything that we've done, we're still learning lessons about how do we really make this so we can pull this equipment out later? How are we going to maintain it and operate it? So we've made huge strides in that realm. So again, it's a testament, I think, to the OEMs and to their partners at TSA to make sure that industry understands that. And then the design community as well, from the days of putting equipment in and building walls around it to really designing and building these facilities to accommodate the true purpose of it and the reality of that.
I've heard a few airline representatives, in particular from Southwest, say how important the baggage handling systems are, particularly to that airline. They said their biggest kind of constraint are the baggage systems.
Oh, sure.
Not necessarily the gates or the whole room.
No. And when you think about an airport, it has two purposes, right? Move baggage, move people, and that's it. In fact, I was in a meeting with another one of my different airline client. He said our two biggest concerns are the baggage and the boarding bridges. That's what makes us, what keeps us whole. Yeah. And that's what's going to sustain us.
Mm-hmm. So you've worked for a diversity of clients as well. I mean, you directly through the TSA contracts, mm-hmm. through airports and mm-hmm. airlines. Any noticeable kind of differences or considerations for people maybe wanting to get into this space or not, or kind of all the same? Or
there, you know, it's great. Every type of client, whether it be larger A&E firm, I do a lot of work for them as well. Airports and airlines and the TSA, they're all different in aspects of their needs, but at the end of the day, they're looking at the same goal, and it's really finding those people that get it. You know, that really get what the purpose is. It's not to turn the buck. It's everything from the customer experience to making sure that the planes stay up in the air and they're safe and that their baggage moves through the process. Everyone's got the same goal.
Awesome. And also talk a little bit about, you know, when you look at a potential project, how do you position yourself to compete, or whether, you know, what, you know, what company you want to work with? And
sure.
Like that? What are some of the strategies you have?
Kind of goes back to the what I was talking about with employees and teammates. It's I look for the same things. I look for the companies that I know I can work with. I'm working with former employers right now because I know their ethics and I know their strategies. I look for firms that are going to that I know are going to do a good job and not destroy my reputation or my company's reputation. That we're going to have a good product at the end of the day. With the airports and airlines, same thing. I think it's. I can't say I've turned down a lot of work over the last 3 years, but there are definitely projects that I've maybe not made a huge push to go after because of either the leadership or lack thereof that could end up being a quagmire, or whether I thought it was the right fit for us. And it's not always the right fit. And then in those circumstances, I will provide recommendations for other folks that they should talk to.
Indeed, it's almost an art of knowing when to say no.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's a hard one, right? Because I would say over the last 6 months, we've had a tremendous amount of work and it's been difficult because of that. And that's the last thing you want to do is to have so much work that you can't put your all into it. Mm-hmm. And I'd rather be a little lean, but be able to put 100% of our efforts and energies into it. So that is a hard thing as a small business. I know a lot of small businesses that are way overextended and it's all about the bottom dollar, and it's really not. That'll come. Yeah, I'm a true believer in karma when it comes to that.
Mm-hmm. Good deal. So, you know, when we're here in the hold room, it's mm-hmm. an opportunity to get to know the person, not only, you know, professionally, but personally as well. So you are a beer man.
Yeah, right? I guess you could say that.
Yes.
Sure.
And in fact, you are known to be quite the master crafter in developing some beers at home. Talk to us a little bit about what's on the menu for this summer.
So I last summer, unfortunately, I'm also a master procrastinator.
Yes.
So typically, I would say over the last 10 years, the style that I would prefer in that season lagged by about 3 months. This time, hopefully, I've got it. I just finished out my stouts. We're done with those. Hopefully this weekend, I'm going to be brewing a blood orange IPA that I brewed last year. My wife, again, as wonderful as she has been in fostering and encouraging me to start my own company, she was wonderful a couple of years ago and got me a 10-gallon brew kettle for Father's Day. I'm sorry, my kids got me a 10-gallon
yes.
brew kettle for Father's Day. So able to brew a whole bunch at once, and which is wonderful because I end up giving away most of my beer because although I could lose a few pounds, if I drank all the beer myself, I'd be even huger. So yeah, so it's a blood orange IPA. I brewed it last year. I'm going to play around a little bit with the hops. There's some new hybrids out there that I want to try out, make them a little more citrusy, and hopefully they'll be ready for pool season.
Well, obviously, if you need a taste tester.
Absolutely.
The fact that you give it to some friends and others kind of piqued our interest.
I think I've brought a bottle here once before, or at least I promised to and never did. So we'll have to make sure that happens when it's released.
Well, I find summertime, continue to enjoy the IPAs, maybe some of the session ones, mm-hmm. and the sours, too.
Yeah, the sours, the gozes, the as well.
Lighter alcohol and very refreshing.
Yeah, I think my favorite style is the Belgian triples, but sometimes you have a couple of those in the bright sun and yeah, you're not doing much else that day. So you've got to be careful with those.
Awesome. Well, it's good seeing you, and you're right down the road here. You're also, it should be noted that you are currently the secretary treasurer mm-hmm. of ACC on our executive committee. And you bring a lot of just incredible perspectives and depth to the organization. So I look forward to working with you in the future.
Thank you. Likewise.
All right. That's it for the hold room. Look forward to seeing you next time.
Thanks for spending some time with us in the hold room. Check back in the next couple of weeks for our next discussion. We really are excited about this new project and are looking forward to hearing from you. Please take some time, find us on social media, and let us know who we should talk to next. As always, you can access all of our episodes on Apple Podcasts or at the ACC Training Hub at training.acconline.org. We'll see you next time in the Hold Room.